Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the Washington Weekly Podcast on the UBS and the Now Podcast channel. Joining us again for the conversation, glad to welcome back, as always, Shane Lieberman, Senior Governmental Affairs Advisor with Governmental Affairs U.S. here at UBS, joining us on Wednesday, November 6th, the day after Election Day. So, Shane, we made it. Thank you for dedicating some time with us today and for spending some time with our listeners and clients. Looking forward to our conversation. Welcome back.
Thanks, Dan. Good to be with you.
So, Shane, I know heading into Election Day, our prior conversation last week, there was some uncertainty as to whether or not we would know an outcome with respect to the White House and perhaps the composition of Congress. Though, as we head into this morning, there was some clarity around that, in particular the White House and at least a portion of Congress. So, what do we know as of today with respect to the outcome?
Yeah, that's right. You know, I think former President Trump had a decisive victory that allowed him to already be proclaimed the president-elect. You know, he has secured more than 270 electors. I think there's only a few states like Nevada and Arizona and Alaska that has not, you know, officially been called. So, you know, but he has already reached the level to put himself in the presidential elect position. And so, you know, at the same time, you know, one of our base theories was that if he was elected, there's a strong chance that it would be a red sweep and he would enjoy a Republican Congress. And we know that's true for the Senate, at least, where Republicans have secured already 52 seats. There are four seats that still have not been called. Two are leaning Republican right now. Two are leaning Democrat, and that could change. So, you know, you're looking at Republicans having a majority in the Senate of, you know, 52, maybe 53 or 54 votes. So Republicans look good there. In the House, you know, there have been about 200 plus races called for Republicans and about 180 to 85 races call for Democrats. So a few dozen races still outstanding where, you know, the vote total is slow to come in. And we expect this may draw out for another week or two before we have a final tally. But, you know, I think Republicans are in a little bit better position in those races that remain to be called. And I think they are, you know, positioned to be ready, and in that case where it comes out that they in fact do have the red sweep and they're going to be ready to go in January, I think, with a Republican, you know, sweep of the elections.
In the early morning hours of today, Shane, once the White House was called, we did hear from President-elect Trump addressing his watch party in Florida. Any takeaways from his address last night, early this morning?
Yeah, I was a little bleary-eyed, but, you know, I did catch it. And, you know, some of it was expected where, you know, he tried to strike a tone, a little bit of unity. And, you know, he said some things to recognize that, you know, we've been through some division the past few years and, you know, and believes it's time to unite. You know, I think we've heard Trump say similar things in the past, so, you know, maybe the moment struck him to say that again. But also, I think something that, you know, maybe a little bit more notable is that him, you know, in his claiming victory, you know, gave a nod to the MAGA movement, right? And praising Senate Republicans and I think expressed support for House Republicans in their part of the red sweep to essentially tee himself up for, you know, his agenda and push really hard and try and get much of his agenda as he can enacted in the first few months. You know, it's going to be a very busy agenda because besides, you know, working on a variety of topics from, you know, taxes to immigration, the Senate's going to have to take up a lot of time to pass nominations to different departments and agencies. So there's going to be a lot of different moving parts here. But, you know, you could see Trump starting to build unity within Republicans to move forward on that agenda.
So, Shane, I'd imagine over the next few months, it will be very busy for the incoming Trump administration, the outgoing Biden administration. When you think about the transition process and President-elect Trump essentially building out his administration over the next few months, what can we expect to see with respect to that process near term over the next few weeks?
Yeah, you're right. You know, in between now and Inauguration Day, January 20th, you know, we have Thanksgiving, Hanukkah, Christmas. So it's a busy period. But all, to your point, the Biden administration is going to be busy trying to finalize its final days in office and finalize regulations and trying to cement things in stone before the Trump administration can reverse some things. You know, regulations that may be proposed but not finalized. The Trump administration can shelve those pretty quickly. So that will be kind of a focus for the Biden administration in their final days and weeks in office. But you're right, the Trump administration that has a transition team that will be working every day between now and Inauguration Day to get itself ready. They will probably start hearing about Trump nominations for different departments and agencies, and those people working with Republican senators to tee up their nomination for, you know, January and February, and so that they're ready to go. You'll hear of the Trump administration probably preparing executive actions, dealing with, you know, the border, energy, and a whole variety of issues. So they're going to be busy kind of teeing themselves up so that they're ready to go on day one of the Trump administration in 2025.
There's a lot there to monitor, keep track of over the next few months. Before we close out, Shane, do you want to get your overall reflections on voter trends, turnouts in this election cycle? What did you take away from yesterday?
Yeah, I mean, overall turnout appears to be down from 2020, but that's not shocking to me as of yet. You know, think about 2020 and what a partisan year it was, and expanded voting for COVID reasons. So it made it a little bit easier for people to vote. So, you know, I think also, you know, many Americans were frustrated that between the choice of Harris and Trump and may have sat this election out. So I'm more interested also just to think about, you know, how did Trump, you know, win this election? And, you know, early signs could be is that, you know, he made really good gains with Latino men, some African-American communities. So, you know, I think he kind of looked for ways to expand the base. And, you know, Republicans as a whole seem to have benefited from this, you know, with winning Senate seats to take over the Senate majority. And so I think, you know, we're going to be diving deeper into this in the coming days and weeks. And, you know, the Harris team and Democrats are going to do a post-mortem dive and figure out what went wrong for them. And I think, you know, one thing I'm always interested to see after elections is do the teams that lost actually learn their lessons, or do they kind of double down on, you know, their, what went wrong, thinking that, you know, maybe they just didn't properly explain or position themselves, and they keep going down maybe what may not be a winning formula for them. So, you know, a lot to take away here, but a lot of it takes time to actually sort out. But the early message or appearances that it looks like Trump just picked up a lot of Latino men and African Americans who have been especially impacted by the economy and felt that a change in direction was what was really needed.
Well, some very interesting observations and, of course, more conversations to follow in the months ahead as we keep an eye on the transition process. Though, Shane, thank you very much throughout this election cycle, keeping our listeners, our clients informed, a current along the way. I wish you some well-earned rest, though do look forward to picking back up with our conversation again soon.
Thank you, Dan. Great to be with you. Hope you have a great week.
Thank you, Shane. Again, today we have been joined by Shane Lieberman, Senior Governmental Affairs Advisor with Governmental Affairs U.S. here at UBS. I do, as always, want to highlight UBS.com/Washington Weekly, where our listeners, our clients can go to locate the latest Washington Weekly publication. Again, that's UBS.com/Washington Weekly. From UBS Studios, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreement and disclosures that we provide to you about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary or ask your UBS financial advisor for a copy.